This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Gary Sidaway, Senior Vice President for Security Strategy at Entity Security, and Richard Thurston, Market Insights Manager, also at Entity Security. And we're talking about the Entity Security Risk Value 2019 report.
Gary Sidaway, SVP of Security Strategy for Entity Security. I have very different hats within Entity Security, but mainly looking at the market challenges for our business and where we can actually support them from a broader cybersecurity perspective.
I'm Richard Thurston, and I'm Market Insight Manager for Entity Security. I've been managing the risk value research, which we'll talk about today, and I'm more generally responsible for understanding the security market and what really matters to our customers.
I just want to give you a bit of background on the report itself and where we started from. It's actually the fifth year we've been running this report, looking at decision makers within strategic businesses across multiple regions, and looking really outside of IT and security-focused executives, so really understanding what their understanding of the cyber risks are within business.
One of the challenges we have when we do these reports is that often we talk to people who are in the know. People who know what we're looking for, people who deal with this day in, day out. You decided that wasn't appropriate for this report.
That's correct, Ian. We wanted really to understand the broader aspects of decision makers within business who aren't necessarily focused on IT or cybersecurity. And that's really why we wanted to broaden out our questionnaire. So we focused on 17 areas that we've identified over the past reports to really focus on good security practice, but outside of that core skill set.
Richard, you pulled a lot of this together. It was a massive amount of data.
Yes, it's been really interesting to look at what business decision makers are thinking about cybersecurity. And to build on Gary's point, it's really interesting how cybersecurity really impacts on people across the business, from facilities to HR, given all the people issues involved with cybersecurity, through to operations. It's been really interesting to get that insight and to understand what they're thinking. And we see quite a lot of difference between what HR people are thinking to what operations people are thinking. And there is, in some ways, a disconnect with what IT people are thinking. We drilled into some of those things into the report.
We've also seen, I think this is again quite interesting, there's a great awareness there. So across the business, there's a great awareness on cybersecurity risks. Even when we ask the question, sort of three out of the top five business risks involve cybersecurity at some level. And that was either cybersecurity threats, data privacy, or even critical national infrastructure.
Given that IT tells us that they're on top of cybersecurity and they know the threat, given the business has told you their understanding of this and they realize how important it is, why did we end up with a disconnect?
That's a very, very, very interesting point. And I think this goes back to either engagement from senior management and really not emphasizing it. So there's a great level of awareness, but actually the implementation and the ownership within a business is seen as an IT problem, but not seen as everybody's problem. And I think that is where some of that disconnect comes in. They see it as somebody else's problem to deal with, and particularly that lays in with the IT department and not the individual or not the board management.
What's quite interesting, Ian, is that we see that very many businesses, the security department isn't always responsible for security in all the businesses we spoke to. So we find that the chief information security officer is only the person responsible in a certain amount of businesses. But quite often the chief executive officer has responsibility on a day-to-day basis for cybersecurity. And there's not always a security team there to back them up. And that can be quite concerning.
But without labouring the disconnect, we've talked for a long time about why security is everybody's problem. This isn't just something we can solve with technology, and that perhaps was part of our problem early on. We all thought there was a technical solution to this and that we didn't need to deal with the people problem. We haven't as an industry really solved the education problem. So how do we now make this everybody's problem in such a way that people are invested in it, rather than what seems to be the common approach of it's everybody's problem, but if you get it wrong, you're getting fired?
Yeah, I think it does come back to what we do from the grassroots perspective. So we've engaged with universities, but I think there's more practical initiatives that we can take as an industry and certainly as Entity Security is bringing people into this and showing them that it is a core skill for everybody, but that internship and actually getting that practical experience and working through, when I was a lad, working through the mill, going through each one of those stages. So working in a SOC infrastructure, looking at answering the phone, which is a great grounding for people and how you express and understand information and share information. All of those things I think we should really start to focus on and actually build that more into our educational system. So all education nowadays, they've all got iPads, they're all aware of technology, but you've also got to relate that to the risks that they face.
But is it fair to say it's people coming into the business that are the problem, as opposed to people who've been there for a long time and aren't necessarily as technically savvy as the new generations arriving?
I think that's where technology can help. So you can take some of those risks away with technology. But we're finding a lot of businesses are sort of caught in the headlights of that. So they're not quite sure which way to turn. There's focus with a wealth of technology and point solutions, but they don't have an overarching security architecture or a real appreciation of where their real risks is. Is it in their technology area? Is it in their data center area? Or is it in their mobile workforce? Understanding where their real risks are and then focusing on that from an architectural perspective, I think, is very important.
But that opens up a whole bunch of challenges for organisations. Let's take skill shortage as the first one. Everybody knows we've got a shortage of people. We can't magically make them appear overnight, but we've got to do something. How much can organisations rely on being able to attempt to offload their security problem to vendors like yourself? And how much do we need to do a better job of bringing new people in? And I don't just mean degree students.
Well, it's really interesting in that over 40% of companies are saying they don't have the skills or resources in-house to manage the number of cybersecurity threats they face. That's quite shocking in some way that so many businesses are struggling, and this figure is only going to grow as the threat landscape worsens. First of all, there is a lot of acknowledgement out there that businesses don't have the skills in-house, and they are struggling somewhat, and they are showing this level of concern. Gary, you've got lots of thoughts on recruitment of people into this industry.
Yeah, I think it is incumbent on businesses also to identify what resources they do have. And I think there are good resources in organisations. And it's then how you augment that with managed security services providers or strategic consultant. But you've got to identify those resources in-house first. And that's a good place to start. And use those within the business as well to educate and broaden out that skill set. Then focus on what's the really important things for those individuals. Rather than saying, well, everything's a problem and everything's your security problem and you need to be responsible for it. So I'm working from home. What are the key things I need to do to secure my environment when I'm working at home? If I'm coming into the office, then what do I do from that perspective? Do I wear a badge or do I have smart systems? All of those things. Just focus on the key points and getting those basics right, I think, is a good start.
If I go back 25, 30 years ago when I was doing technical support, when we were trying to get new systems into sales teams, we would pick on the senior sales secretary. Why? Because that was the person who understood what was going on in that department. Everybody went to her with their problems. She was probably the most technically aware in most cases. Educating her helped to educate the rest of that team. Do you see companies from a security perspective making a concerted effort to identify those people in teams who've got some security awareness and using them almost as a localized central knowledge for that business team?
I think that's a great point, actually. I think we spend a lot of time talking about security policies and we do awareness training, but it's that relationship to their work environment that makes that difference, that makes that connection. Generally, you're looking at it from a broader spectrum rather than actually, yeah, I'm sitting in an office and these things apply to me because I know the guy sitting next to me has been through this and has identified it. That human connection is very important when you look at cybersecurity. We tend to lose track of that when we're writing security policies, for example. You've got to make them practical. You've got to relate them to a story that people understand because it then becomes something that they can connect to rather than a static document that says, okay, you need to do these things. You need to make it connected. And that, again, will reinforce the security practice through the management structure as well. You need that discipline.
When we think about policies, cybersecurity is not a simple thing to solve. It would be nice if we could go to the shop and buy two boxes of cybersecurity policy, drop them into the office and say, there, everybody, done. Read it, use it. It's a living thing. It changes every minute of the day. It changes by the attack. It changes by the size of the company. It changes by our circumstances as a company. Where are we with companies actually having valid cybersecurity policies rather than a tick box in the compliance form?
From our report and the index, nearly half don't actually have a security policy in the first place. Somewhere to start is resolving that problem. It's identifying the real risk to that business and writing policies for that rather than going and getting you two boxes from the shop. You've got to make it relevant to that business and you've got to make it active within that business as well. Those are two things that we've certainly seen in the report that says it shouldn't be static. You've got to review these because the threat landscape is constantly changing. You've got to make sure that that policy is up to date and carrying on, but you've also got to test it. That's the other area that we've seen in the statistics again, that whilst policies might be in place, they're not active. They're not alive, they're not tested, and that certainly is something a third party can make sure that they're actually doing, that third party view of that policy is a validation of where it is.
That's really interesting. So 58% of organisations, according to the Risk Value Research, have a formal cybersecurity policy. So that's less than 3 in 5. This is really concerning. And it's only increased by 1 percentage point in a year. A lot of businesses aren't making progress with developing these cybersecurity policies.
I think the counterpoint to that, though, is that they all accept that cybersecurity and good cybersecurity benefits the business, and also they relate it to benefiting society. Nearly over 90% of that was actually, it's a benefit society to be secure, but we're not seeing that connection.
But if compliance is as important as companies claim it is, and here we are, 1 year on from GDPR, where you'd think that cybersecurity would have moved up that food chain to have a formal policy, 58% sounds atrocious.
Yes, on the compliance side of things, there's a number of really interesting things that we found. Only 3 in 10 companies think that GDPR applies to them, despite the fact it applies to every company that does business in any member state of the European Union. So that's really, really concerning. They do think compliance is important, but the awareness of what matters to them is really low. And we see that 36% of organisations would actually pay a ransom just to try and avoid their compliance obligations. This is really shocking.
Yeah, we've seen some really worrying headlines against that as well. And generally, the advice across the board is not to pay ransomware. Businesses are in a tricky situation when you actually look at that. But you're fueling the attack vectors against that. You're probably fueling different crime vectors against that. But it's then very difficult when you put a business in that situation of what are they likely to do. And that brings you back into, okay, what should they be doing? How are they looking at backup infrastructures? How are they looking at incident response? And looking at those types of things as well when they come to ransomware perspective.
Kind of brings me back to where I started on the question, which is the complexity of a cybersecurity policy. If we think of a backup policy, or we think of a disaster recovery policy, we think of an employment policy, these things are fairly cut and dry. We can bound them. The problem with cybersecurity is that it cuts across the whole of the business, both horizontally and vertically. Every role is affected by it. Everything we do is affected by it. Should we therefore be looking at cybersecurity policies as how does our business function and how does our business continue to function, rather than just talking about cybersecurity?
And that is really interesting. We've got sucked into this as an organisation and as a business and industry to say, well, your starting point is always going to be your security policy. You've got to relate that to your compliance initiatives. To Richard's point, sometimes they understand what those are, sometimes they don't. It's that connection with actually what their real risks are and understanding that, putting an architecture around it that actually is appropriate. That's the other area that a lot of businesses don't understand. What is my appropriate risk posture? And then how do I manage that effectively? Where are my real risks? My favourite one always is British Airways. Spend a huge amount of time focusing on engines and flight and their planes, and actually couldn't fly because they couldn't put a sandwich on the plane. So your real risks come from different areas. A bit of extreme example. But as an organization, you always need that outside view, because when you're in that business, you think, okay, this is important to me because this is my business and how I run it. But that external view gives you that different perspective. How you partner with a broader spectrum is, for me, important.
But how much of this is also partly stale thinking? If we go back 20 years, the idea of home workers was a rarity. It might be the occasional director at home. If we think about today, people want home working as a right. They want the ability to work from home. But in terms of protecting company data and systems, that creates a vastly complex set of problems. You don't know who else is in the environment. You don't know what equipment they're using. Is it their own? Is it up to date? Have they managed the endpoint protection on it? How do we reset our expectation from, we'll build a process based on us owning this building, 4 walls, and being able to build a fortress, to we're really trying to protect a shifting sand dune?
This is certainly where, from a global NTT perspective, we're looking at those smart initiatives. You're looking at that smart society and that smart connectivity piece. And then how you layer over technology, how you layer over an infrastructure that allows you to be dynamic in how you secure that. That will be a really interesting development as we move that forward. As NTT, we've seen some of those initiatives come through. So in terms of the work that we do with the mobile industry, with the work we're actually doing with large city infrastructures, is trying to look at what you can do to move those dynamics on. And to your mobile and home working perspective, how do we put an infrastructure in that is secure by design out of that perspective? How you develop applications, how you deliver those applications, how the user authenticates into those applications, then becomes become part of that smart infrastructure that you can rely on. You're removing part of the human element in that to say, well, actually, everything we deliver to you is secured. But what you need to do is these things to make sure that you're in that environment in a secure way.
And that brings us back to the earlier point that cybersecurity is everybody's problem, not just IT's. But it also takes us off into one of the other results you have in the report, the worry about critical national infrastructure. When we look around today, we see strikes, particularly in the United Kingdom, where railways suddenly come to a grinding halt. We see major road incidents where you sit in traffic for 5, 6, 7 hours and go nowhere. That's helping to drive the idea of people working from home. But at the same time, we're seeing headline after headline of attacks by Russian hackers or Chinese hackers or some other state-sponsored hacker looking to take down electricity, take down communications, take down other things. It drives us closer to that idea of people working from home because it overcomes reliance on one of those things. What were the key elements that people were really worried about?
That's really interesting you talk about critical national infrastructure, Ian. What really surprised me actually from this research is there's a lot of recognition of threats to critical national infrastructure, be that telecoms networks, medical facilities, food networks, power networks or water networks. There's actually a surprisingly large amount of recognition of the fact there is actually a threat here. There is a recognition that that threat could impact the way you do business. 35% of businesses are saying that a cyber attack on critical national infrastructure could actually affect their organization in the next 12 months. That's really shocking because for a long time, people didn't really consider threats to CNI to be an issue. All of a sudden, the attacks you see on smart cities or the attacks you see on financial systems that are being reported by mainstream media are really making people realize there is an issue here that could impact them.
As a business, though, what do they do about it?
Well, it's really important as a business to ensure that your architecture is resilient. So you'll have a connection to the internet, but if that goes down, then what do? You should be looking at developing a resilient network architecture, and SDN can help you with that, software-defined networking. It's about looking at your response to an incident and can you recover if something happened? Don't assume it won't happen to me. Whatever business you're in, whether it's high profile or low profile to cyber criminals, your business could be impacted by downtime. So what do if something goes down?
To Ian's point, you were stuck on a train. I used to get to an office. Now I'm stuck on a train that's been crippled by whatever. What do I do? How do I connect into that network? Do I have a process that says, okay, now I'm not in my office, what is my security profile against that? And I think that's good.
Well, the old problems still exist. We can still be hit by travel problems, and that's all part of a good business continuity plan.
I remember when we had business continuity plans, and we said, well, what if people can't get in by train? What if we have an electricity problem and we can't use our electronic keys to get into the building, and we've got to find somebody with a physical key? This was all things that we did. Not just 5 years, or 10 years, or 15, but we did it 20, 25, 30, 35. We've always had plans as to what do we do if the business is hit by that. With cybersecurity, we seem to be forgetting that there are basics that we've always done to keep our business running, and we've wrapped it up in, oh my God, the bad guys have hit us, and people seem to go into blind panic. We've got to stop this, surely.
There's a lot of headlines that drive this, but there's that practical reality as well. We have come a significant way, and I think we should never lose sight of that. Our environment is a lot more secure than it was. There's clearly changing threat landscape, but I think we have come a long way in terms of security education. Again, from the report, there's a lot of security awareness, and it's actually now connecting that to the more practical things that we can do from an individual perspective and making sure that that comes through. We've just moved our headquarters. We've moved into a beautiful office in Thiel, and we implemented our work at home plan, and it was already there. Everybody knew it, didn't have any disruption. We went through and it followed through very nicely. We didn't have to rewrite it. Everybody knew it was there and that it was implemented.
But is that not the key phrase? Everybody knew it was there. When I spoke to Kai Grunwitz a couple of weeks ago, one of the points he made was that when we think about dealing with incidents, most people don't know what their responsibility is. A lot don't even know they're supposed to be involved. It's a communication breakdown inside a business, surely.
I would certainly agree with the level of communication that's required. That level of how you respond to an incident, that testing of that plan is equally important. To those static things that we write and never go back and look at, that certainly has to be changed within a business. It's actually, what do we do in a disaster? And it's not necessarily a cybersecurity disaster. It's what and who is then responsible. And to your point again, how we communicate. There's a lot of emphasis within businesses to communicate externally. this is what we're doing, this is how we've handled it, but it affects everybody internally as well. And sometimes that's lost in that situation where you're in blind panic and say, well, actually, I don't know what to do. You do if you go back to that basics, and it's getting that natural basic instinct to say, oh, yeah, I know what to do in this situation and how to communicate that.
Most of the time we look at these reports and we look at the data and our analysis in the microcosm of a business. The reality is we're moving into a phase where we are becoming a smarter, connected society, where we are interdependent upon other people's electronics, upon other people's systems. Therefore, any outage, any issue becomes amplified. Were people worried about this when you did the report? And if so, what sort of things are they particularly focused on?
Clearly, from a broader NTT's perspective, we're seeing a lot of smart initiatives, and we're seeing a lot of that in terms of how do we make our people movement more efficient? How do we identify certain critical areas of risk within a smart society? You can look at initiatives around using microphones, and privacy and compliance come into play, which is causing businesses and certainly some states in America some dilemma around using facial recognition technology. As a society, we're always going to push up against those boundaries to get to that next stage. And I think we're at that tipping point now where we are more acceptable of a little bit of invasion of privacy to make things better. I'm moving within a city and I know that I can go via this route because I've been alerted by my smart app that says actually there's a bit of a problem in this area, so I would take this route. It's very similar to what we do when we're driving our car. There's been an accident, you're still on the fastest route, so carry on. Or actually, there's a bit of a crowd disturbance here, let's route you a different way. That comes in when you start to look at this, and people then become more acceptable to it. Compliance is a really interesting area at the moment because as a business, we're looking at data privacy. It's a very important issue. But as a business, we also want to share information because it makes us more intelligent and more focused on the risks. And that dilemma is causing us real concerns. There's a lot of initiatives to keep data either in country or in region, which again is putting a lot of pressure on organizations such as ourselves. Or how do we share data then? How do we make the most of this data when we're facing a global risk problem?
I thought that's really interesting, Gary. Smart society is such a very different area to the classical telecoms universe. The old world of securing a network connection was far simpler. Now we're securing smart cities, which are essentially a physical infrastructure and lots of sensors. And that brings a whole new challenges, and a lot of municipal organisations don't really understand intuitively how to secure those smart cities. I think there's a lot of new challenges there that certainly we can help organisations and cities with. Just diving into the research, asking organisations quite how important they thought cybersecurity was to society, and the massive 88% came back and said, well, look, we really need cybersecurity for next generation society.
It's how you connect to that smart world, and going back to critical national infrastructure, the risk against that. As we make our cities smart, as we make our cars smart, as we make our society smart, all of those start to interplay. We know that's a honeypot to a lot of threats and a lot of risks. So my smart city now becomes bottleneck because all the traffic lights are turned off. We do need a different approach to that. How you segment that, how you look at those risks will be a different challenge as we move forward. And it's not just a business challenge that we're broadening out into.
And beyond smart cities, we're looking at a lot of interesting areas like smart sport, for example. We as NTT sponsor the Tour de France, the cycle race, and the Tour de France processes, as you may know, an enormous amount of data. Some of this is really personal to the cyclists. Some of it is really personal to the organisations concerned. And it's actually really important to secure that data. If the information on someone's medical conditions is obtained by a hacker, that's a serious issue for that cyclist. Smart societies encompassing so many of these areas around smart cities, like we were talking about, smart sports, we get into agriculture. There's so many aspects of smart society that need to be secured.
But securing that isn't going to be easy. To take the numbers you gave us earlier, only 30% thought GDPR applied to them. If we're talking about a smart environment, that's 100% of everybody all the time. If we're going to have people understand what they're doing here, people themselves have to take responsibility for what information they give away. As we've seen in Toronto, this is not just about surveillance cameras looking down at people. It's what information those cameras gather. It's how the AI systems and the other systems behind take that data, use that data, more importantly, compare it with other types of data. How can we promise citizens privacy? If I want to give you services tuned to you for exactly that moment you want them, I have to have incredibly intrusive, accurate and personal data. People don't want that, but they do want that service.
Yes, that's always been that challenge of how do you, as society moves and evolves, we want that personal experience. We want to be treated as that individual and have those services, but it then requires us to be open around some of our personal data. And I think we will become more acceptable to that. The challenge that raises is generally we use the same personal data. I buy flowers for my mother. I will use the same data as I use for applying for a mortgage. All of those things have to change. And I think a smart society allows us to take a different approach. I know now, because of my smartphone, I'm sitting in my London office. I know now, because I'm sitting next to Richard, that we're both in the London office. And I can use those data points to validate where I am. That openness of individual pieces of data that can't be connected, but you can connect them in a smart society, brings a next level of security. Risk avoidance becomes quite interesting when you start to look at how you connect all of these pieces of data that could potentially be associated with an individual, but you scatter them, you connect them through different ways that brings a level of security into it.
We've seen this in the past. We've seen people talk about being able to hold data in isolation. And very quickly, we've discovered that when you connect two or three pieces of those isolated bits of data, the rest of it becomes very obvious. If we can't maintain that data separation at a business level, if we can't maintain that security and privacy at a business level, how on earth do we scale that to a society level?
Because the challenge is different. Where you look at a particular business, you know where that particular business infrastructure is, and you can profile that environment. As you move into this next world of a smart society and a smart connected society, that becomes effectively a moving target. So Richard's example around the Tour de France, that is constantly moving, and it's a constantly changing environment that then becomes very difficult to profile and attack. That data is constantly on the move and shifting between different infrastructures. And that becomes quite compelling when you look at it from a security perspective, because you don't quite know where to attack. What profile am I trying to pick up as I move through that? As we broaden out and become actually probably more diverse in what we connect, it then becomes very difficult to actually get a consistent profile about an individual or about a business. That actually becomes quite an interesting area that as a security industry we should start to look at. I don't think we're there yet, but I think certainly as we start building out a more connected society, you can actually then start to secure it better because of that diversity.
So does that mean all the work we're doing at the moment for cybersecurity policies for business, all the privacy work we're doing at the moment that we're becoming obsessed by because we have to for compliance, all those regulations that we're trying to meet, are really just one step to a whole new system where much of that will become redundant over time?
I don't think it'll be redundant. They become the building blocks. This is where you need to do those basics, but you need to connect that business into that broader perspective. That's where the challenge will come as we move into this connected world and a connected society, is how you build on those pieces that actually lay the stronger foundation. It goes back to the earlier points we were making. As individuals, what are we aware of? Where are our risks coming from? How do we actually connect into that world? As an infrastructure provider and a business application provider, they've got to start thinking that way. That's certainly our future challenge. How do we start thinking in that connected world and that connected society to actually lay in security and lay in risk avoidance and make it, we shouldn't be having this conversation because it's automatically secured because we know it's being delivered in that way.
I think the promise of everything being automatically secured will make many of the respondents very happy.
And one final thing, there's a lot of really insightful things in the Risk Valley report. So to download it, go to www.nttsecurity.com.
There's some really practical advice in there as well, which we probably didn't touch on. Some practical advice for everybody, so some key things that we should also look out for.
Gary, Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.